Welcome to the Talk Birdie to Me podcast. This is Bird Dog Banner with Emily, and that's me. This is an informal but educational discussion on dog-related topics. We'll cover everything from waterfowl and upland hunting to training tips and even some controversial topics from a dog trainer's perspective. If you like what you hear, please be sure to subscribe and follow me on social media at Short Hairs and Shotguns and also at Horizon Retrievers. Welcome to episode 11 of the Talk Birdie to Me podcast. Today we're going to talk about the German Shorthair Pointer, which I'm going to refer to as a GSP or a short hair. The intention of this episode is to be a resource for anyone that's going to be buying or adopting their first GSP. So it may seem like I am trying to dissuade you from pursuing the GSP. And maybe I am, but the idea is to give an honest, practical, realistic look of what life is like with these dogs. And I say that because a lot of times you'll see people go, oh, that's a short hair, I love them, Team GSP, they're such great dogs. And while all that's true, I think that a lot gets lost in that translation of the kind of people that like them and the type of home that they do the best in. So my intention really isn't to talk you out of it if you feel like this is the breed for you, if this is the best dog there is for you. That's not my intention. But what I would love to get out of this episode is for people who like the looks of them or go, yeah, my friend has one and they love it, or who aren't really sure of what life would look like with them, for those people to make an educated decision on deciding if this is really the breed for them. Because I think a lot of times there are better fits for people out there, but we get caught up in everyone has one and they love it. Well, that's true, but there's also a lot that comes with it, and there's also a lot of short hairs that aren't in great homes or need a better suited home. And that statement comes from a place of seeing so many short hairs in shelters or at rescues or in foster homes because they need to be rehomed because owners are not fully aware of what they were getting into. So I see posts like this daily. I'm a member of a couple, or I'm involved in a couple GSP rescues, and I see this all the time in Facebook groups or through emails, literally daily, of short hairs needing to be rehomed. So it's not even that they're bad dogs or anything. It's like the whole, I've got a one-year-old short hair that needs a new home. Sweet, smart, friendly. We just don't have time for it. That's the very typical post that I see on a very regular basis. And I get tagged in those. I get emailed those. And it's constant. It's incessant. And it's wild to me that there are so many good, healthy, young, happy dogs that need homes because they're not a good fit for their current home. And I even regularly have people reach out to me personally and see if I want their short hair. Rather than getting it trained, they recognize that they're not the right fit for it. And so my real goal is to prevent these heartbreaking situations where dogs are homeless, essentially, or about to be homeless, and help people make an educated decision prior to being in that situation. Nothing against those people. You know, I have a whole podcast on rehoming dogs, and I've done a ton of it. But if we are not a good fit for a dog and we pursue that dog anyways, we are setting ourselves, our family, and that dog up for failure from the get-go. And as my client and dear friend Melissa, who owns a short hair, Drake, said to me recently in regard to GSPs, she said, your perspective on dog ownership will be changed when you own a short hair. And I think that really sums up my intention of this podcast, is to kind of just note that it's one thing to be a dog owner and it's another thing to have a short hair lifestyle. So my intention here again isn't to just talk shit about short hairs, but I'm going to give a really honest, realistic look at what life is like with them. And so this might be brutally honest, and if you are very team GSP and it's going to pain you to hear anyone say anything but all the best about them, maybe now is a good time to stop this. But if you are really considering adding one of these to your family and want, you know, to make the best educated research decision, I'm going to give my perspective as a trainer who has spent a lot of time with short hairs, who has had hundreds and hundreds of them live in her house with her and worked with even more. So this is my perspective from the experiences that I've had with all the short hairs I've been around and lived with. I know people will take this personally and maybe get defensive or feel like I'm attacking their breed. And I just want to remind you that first and foremost, I have a short hair that I love more than anything on this planet. She is the love of my life. I would literally sacrifice anyone and everyone and anything for her without a second thought. So it's not that I don't love short hairs by doing this podcast. That's far from the truth, but it's evident that they aren't for everyone. And it's absolutely imperative that if we're signing up for one for the health of the dog and the happiness of our family, we've got to be really honest about that. And for two, there's as much variation within breeds as between them. And I'll repeat that a lot throughout these episodes, but keep that in mind during this podcast that I'm going to be doing a lot of generalizing. So you're going to find a lot of variation. I talk about this a little bit more in this podcast and in my Picking a Breeder podcast especially. You're going to find a lot of variation whether you're looking at pet GSPs or show GSPs or versatile NAVDA type GSPs or field line GSPs. There's a lot of different lines and types of short hairs out there. And so to just say all short hairs are XYZ is not true. And you can't do that about pretty much any breed anymore. There's so much variation in them. But I think it's important to recognize there are a lot of qualities that are pretty standard that you need to be prepared for. So, you know, if you are not interested in devoting a lot of time to a dog, regardless of what line or what breeding of from what breeder you buy a short hair from, that's probably not going to be the dog for you. You know, there are plenty of dogs out there that are lower maintenance, lower energy, have a much lower time requirement, but regardless of where you buy a short hair from, these are high maintenance, high involvement kind of dogs. So I am going to be speaking in generalizations, meaning if I say something that doesn't relate to you, you know, if I say short hairs are X and you go, well, my short hair is Y, so you're, you know, that's not true. Well, of course, it can't be true for all dogs. I can't say anything is going to be true for all dogs, let alone, you know, it doesn't even matter that they're all the same breed. But my intent here is to say what to expect, because a lot of them are like this based on my experience. And I'm not trying to argue with anyone or offend anyone if someone has a dog that lies outside of the generalizations that I'm talking about today. But I hope to give people an honest look at what they should typically expect. So let's start off with a little quick history of this German short hair pointer, so we have a good idea of what to expect based on their purpose, based on why they've been bred for years. The GSP is what we here in America refer to as a versatile hunting dog, meaning they're bred for hunting, but not just one specific type of game, but for what people generally refer to as fur and feather, meaning they have a variety of hunting purposes. So around 1850, shotguns became more widely available, and the common man, meaning not just the rich, finally had the right to hunt. So there became this need for a dog that could hunt at all, including fur, feather, small and big game, land, in water, all of that. So they needed a dog that could point and retrieve and track and swim and dispatch predators and so on. So that's where our this very start of the versatile hunting dog came from. And I'm going to be quoting a lot from the podcast Hunting Dog Confidential, which is undoubtedly my favorite podcast of all time. If you haven't already, be sure to check that out, regardless of what breed of dog you are interested in. Lots of phenomenal information there, and I love the way that Craig and Jennifer present that. But a paragraph worth noting from the website, from the Hunting Dog Confidential website, Craig says in the fourth episode, hunting in Germany looks a little different from hunting in North America, with more regulations and procedures to learn. Additionally, boar and deer are commonly targeted, usually through a method known as independent forest search. Dogs are released into the forest to find game and drive it back towards the line of hunters. Special emphasis is placed on dogs that bark at the sight or scent of game, which alerts the hunters to the incoming animal. And in this podcast, Craig is talking about the development of what will eventually become the German short hair pointer. And what's noteworthy here, in my opinion, is that in the history of the short hair, we have these dogs that are bred to be independent, that are bred to run throughout the forest looking for all sorts of game, including fur and feather. They're bred to be vocal when encountering game, and most importantly, they're bred for a very intentional purpose, which is not to hang out or be a part of the family. They are bred to be serious hunting dogs. And over the years, we've shaped that into what we consider the modern GSP. We've shaped that into a more Americanized dog by making them what Craig refers to as the most bird doggy of all the German dogs. So the most uplandy, in my opinion, or I feel like he's trying to say, of all the dogs compared to maybe like the wire hair, which is a little bit more into fur, but the most bird doggy of all of the German dogs. We've really put an emphasis on field ability, like the running and pointing, than other German breeds. And that really comes from Americans loving pointers and setters, what some people refer to as English pointers, which are called pointers. We've turned the GSP into kind of this fast, far-ranging bird dog, much more like pointers and setters than other German breeds. And even Craig mentions the difference in this podcast between the NAVDA type GSP, which would be like the more versatile hunting dog, and the field trial type GSP, which, you know, some people argue should be called the American short hair pointer. So I just mentioned this to note that there's a big variation within the breed here, and I talk a lot about this in my Choosing a Breeder podcast as well, or episode, I guess, as well. But we have these versatile hunting dogs with this emphasis on bird dog abilities. We've bred them for their independence, for their desire to run far and fast, for their ability to find all types of game, and so on. And these are all traits that we see show up in essentially all short hairs to some extent. So some show up more than others, but I think you can pretty much find all of those traits in the majority of short hairs, regardless of their specific breeding. So regardless of if they're, you know, field trial type dogs or show dogs or whatever, you'll see some variation of these qualities. And many of these qualities are what owners complain about. So I want to break these down and kind of give a realistic view of what it's like to live with dogs that have been bred for so many years and so many generations for these qualities. But before we dive into this, let's first discuss perspective. So everything is relative and depends on a person's particular experience. So if you've never eaten an apple, it would be nearly impossible for you to compare an apple to an orange. Or if you've only had tangerines, your comparison of a tangerine to an orange based on relative experience would be a lot different than someone who can compare an apple to a tangerine to an orange. So the way someone might describe a GSP who has only had pointers and setters will be vastly different from someone describing a GSP that's only had Labradors or Pit Bulls or something like that. Everything is relative, so keep that in mind. You've got to know where your information is coming from, what their experience is, and you know, if you're asking someone about their experience in owning a short hair, you've got to keep in mind not only their relative experience, but their lifestyle too. And we'll talk about that more in a little bit, but keep in mind everything is relative. So let's start off with independence. GSPs should naturally be very independent, especially when we're comparing them to dogs like Labradors. So Labs tend to be very engaging, very handler-oriented, meaning their desire to work with you is very high. They want to know what you're doing. They want to be a part of it. And even when we give them the option to roam, a lot of times they can be a little bit sticky, meaning they don't go very far. They'll be trotting along beside us. They'll be sitting there staring at us like, what are we doing out here? And so on. That's also a generalization. But when you compare Labs to short hairs, their independence is going to be vastly different. Short hairs are known to love people and love to cuddle and all those kinds of things. They can even be quite obsessed with their people and have separation anxiety. That's common and something to be aware of. But they're also very independent, especially when it comes to being outside when their hunting instincts kick in. So what that looks like is a lot of short hairs are fine being 100 or 200 or 300 yards away and not worrying about where mom or dad is. Even as puppies, we'll see a lot of them are totally fine going off on their own, which is kind of an abnormal puppy trait for the majority of puppies who want to stick to their people and not get left behind and those kinds of things. This can be very surprising and even quite scary for people who aren't familiar with this quality. So if you think you're going to take your adult short hair that you just rescued out to the park that's not fenced in and let them off leash and they're just going to hang out with you and kind of mosey around, it might be very surprising and often scary when they take off at mock speed straight into the woods with zero intention of coming back. And especially if you've only had Labs who are constantly your shadow and are generally pretty fine off leash and don't always need to be e-collar conditioned and those kinds of things. If that's your experience, getting a short hair who is very okay with running straight away from you for a far distance, that could be very alarming and definitely something worth noting that's going to be a little bit different than a lot of other dogs. And that quality kind of goes for the majority of pointing dogs, but more so short hairs than a lot of other ones because of their bird doggy qualities. So for Blitz, when she's outside, she's almost never in sight. She is very big on exploring and has a very hard time settling outside, is restless, and really doesn't care to be around me at all. She's got shit to do, places to be, turtles to see, and so on. So when she's outside, she's rarely in sight. And that can be uncomfortable for a lot of people. So I'll take her somewhere even completely new, a different game lands or somewhere hunting. I let her off leash and a lot of times she's wearing a GPS collar, but even in those instances where she's not, she has a very good sense of where she is and a very good sense of where I am. And I'm never worried about her straight up getting lost. She's always going to find her way back to me. It might take her own time, but at some point she's going to come back. So even if I don't see her, I never really worry about her other than the fact that bad things could certainly happen, and that's something to be aware of. You know, she could get hurt. She could get impaled by a large stick, which actually happened, which she did make her way back to me. But that could have, you know, if that would have hit an artery, she could have very easily died in the woods that day, and I would have never been able to find her without her GPS collar on. So bad things can certainly happen, but she's 7 years old and we've grown up together. And at this point in our lives, especially, I'm very comfortable not seeing her because I know that she's somewhere around. And recently, I went out of town with Ember And my boyfriend Parker kept Blitz for me while I was out of town. And he was a little bit apprehensive about having her at his horse farm because she is so independent and is very different from the other farm dogs that like to kind of hang around him. So I promised him, you know, she's not going to run away. Even if you don't see her, she's not taking off somewhere. She's just checking things out and she'll be back at some point. You can put a GPS collar on her, you can put an e-collar on her and ask her to come back anytime, but even if you can't see her, she's not running off, but she won't stay close to you. That's the way she is. And he was pretty apprehensive about it, but that first day, he called me and he said, yeah, I never really saw her except for on just split occasions where she would show up for a minute, go, oh, hey, you're still here. I'll be back in a little bit. And that is, in my experience, very much what your average short hair will do. So I have a lot of dogs at any given time. And you'll see that, you know, the Labs and the Boykins, the Spaniels, the Catahoulas, who I have frequently, they're generally somewhere within, you know, 30 to 40 yards. And they'll run around and play and stuff. But they're typically not very far. And that's not something they've been trained to do. That's just their comfort level of being that close to me. And then in the background, you'll see all the short hairs running around at a much further distance. They consistently have to be recalled and managed in order to stay in sight. So it's short hairs can be a big difference for some people who are used to having a dog that wants to kind of stay close on their own. Because especially given room to roam, short hairs are going to be out in the forest running like they've been bred to do. Or out in the prairie or field running just like they've been bred to do. And a lot of them will check back in, not all of them. So it's not something we should ever trust without a dog, without a super reliable recall or a way to get them back. But keep in mind, compared to other dogs especially, that having a short hair might mean that if they're not e-collar trained in those kinds of situations where you're outside, they've got to have a leash on or else they are gone out of sight. Or in small places, like Blitz hates to go to small parks and stuff where she can't really be off leash because, you know, if there's not a couple hundred yards for her to go off leash, I can't really let her off leash because she's not going to stay close. She's not going to just trot along my side like Ember will. So she's either needs to be off leash where she can be really off leash, like a game lands or big private property, or she's going to have to be on leash. So management comes into play. I could keep her off leash and recall her or use my e-collar to get her to turn every, you know, 40 yards or whatever, but that's going to be constant. She's not just going to hang out in that general area. I'm going to have to constantly stay on top of getting her to stay in that area. She's not going to ever choose to do so. So keep that in mind. You know, I don't let my client dogs be far out of sight unless they have their GPS collars on. So when we're at the farm in different places, that means me recalling them a bunch or constantly turning them using the e-collar to help manage to maintain that distance from me, because that's not what a lot of them will choose to do. Again, you'll see all the other little dogs kind of hanging out at my feet, and then out in the distance will be the short hairs who I constantly need to keep an eye on or else they will wander off. And it's not bolty, it's not what I would consider willful disobedience, it's not them trying to run away, it's just they need a lot of room to roam and they're going to take advantage of that when they have it. So if you're not prepared to keep them near you, they're going to keep going. And again, not to be bad, that's just the way they are, that's the way we've bred them to be. So something to note here, this is why I personally do not like hiking with short hairs. I got Blitz thinking she was going to be a great hiking dog because, you know, short hairs are so high energy. But honestly, she's probably my least favorite dog to hike with because it's not very enjoyable for either of us. So hiking with Ember looks like she's either in heel position, which I never have to remind her to maintain. She's happy to just hang out at my side. Or I let her off leash and she kind of trots around. She sniffs a few things, but she was always going to stay within maybe 20 or 30 yards of me. She might run off a little bit ahead for 50 yards or something on a whim, but in general, she's going to be real close to me. So especially when we're hiking in places where we might encounter other people or we're, let's say we're in the mountains of North Carolina, where if they're going to be off leash, a lot of places they have to be on leash. But if you're going to be off leash, if you can't see more than 20 yards ahead of you, it's not really practical or safe to have a short hair off leash there, because they're definitely going to be out of sight and you never know what's coming. So even if, you know, your dog's friendly, you never know if they're going to encounter a dog that isn't friendly. And in order to be polite and respectful, it's imperative that we never let our dog go off leash up to any other dog. So we've got to keep them in sight where we can see them and recall them back if necessary. So hiking with a short hair means that generally they have to be on leash. And for Blitz, that's a miserable experience. And a lot of short hairs are much better on leash than she is, but she's had a lot of freedom in her life and she has this expectation that she's entitled to a lot of freedom, which I take full responsibility for. But that means that she's going to literally throw a fit about being on leash. So when I hike with her, I do it cane across style, where I have her in a pulling harness that's designed for her to pull into. It's called a cane across harness. And I attach that to a harness on me that's designed to be pulled. Again, cane across. And I just let her pull me up the mountain, which works well. And we both have made that as enjoyable as it can be for both of us. But if I had to pick a dog to go hiking with, I am 100% of the time going to choose Ember over Blitz, because she's either going to be in a calm heel beside me, or if I have the opportunity to be off leash, she can be without me constantly worrying about her, reeling her back in, managing her, and so on. So unless Blitz has the opportunity to be a good distance away, she really needs to stay on leash so that I can maintain sight, visual on her, and make sure she doesn't go up to other people. And that's I would say a pretty standard quality through short hairs, that if you have a short hair that's hanging around at 20-30 yards, that would be unusual, because that's not what they've been bred for. The idea of a pointing dog is to expand beyond gun range to find birds that we're not going to flush up by walking wherever we're walking. If we want a dog to stay within gun range, we use a flushing dog. And if we want a dog outside of gun range, outside of 40 to 50 yards, we use a pointing dog. So pointing dogs have been bred for a long time to be outside of that 40 to 50 yard range. So I would say it would be very unusual to have one that naturally wants to stay close or enjoys staying close. And that doesn't mean you can't take a short hair hiking or you can't take them off leash hiking. There are plenty of people that do. Lots of people on social media have very dedicated hiking short hairs, and that's, you know, a huge part of their life, and they make that work and enjoy it. But for me personally, depending on, I think that's a little bit of, again, relative experience. When I have Ember to compare Blitz to, I'm going to choose Ember. And also, that's part of Blitz's lifestyle. She spent a ton of time off leash. She grew up on a horse farm. And even though she spent a lot of time on leash as a puppy, she really hasn't into her adult years, because she doesn't enjoy it and I don't enjoy it. So that's not something we do together. So again, it's kind of a mix of perspective and how you raise them, for sure. But keep in mind, the nurture is important, but the nature in this instance, I think, is more important. So if you're really looking for that kind of lazily trot along beside you, might even be behind you, that in my mind is, you know, my pit bull, my bully mixed breed, if you will, is ideal for that. She's never going to be ahead of me on a trail, but she's not going to go very far, so she's ideal for a couple miles. So I understand if you need a more high energy dog to do some serious hiking with, but again, Blitz is not my preferred dog to go hiking with, because she doesn't enjoy being on leash, and it's not always practical to have her off leash. So we're talking about independence here, and that also means, regardless of what you do with them, they've got to be well trained. There's really no getting out of that. No, well, they're just naturally a good dog, as you see with, like, maybe a lot of labs and things that don't, all dogs deserve to be trained well. But the amount of effort you might invest in a short hair versus what you might need to invest in a lab could be very different. you've got to put some time into the short hair for off-leash reliable recall and for walking on a leash. Even if you don't have any intentions of having your short hair off-leash, which to me, maybe that's kind of a red flag that maybe you don't need a short hair. They really, I think, deserve that. And a lot of times for their mental emotional health need that. And for that, listen to my previous podcast on mental emotional health. But if you don't have any intentions of having them off leash, if they escape, you are not going to get them back if they do not have a well-trained recall. They are going to be gone. I see people post about it all the time, lost short hairs, because they don't just mosey over to the neighbor's house when they get off leash and they don't have a reliable recall. They take off, like gone for hours. And it's obviously terrifying and incredibly dangerous. So regardless of your intentions, for safety reasons and for their quality of life, I think that all short hairs need to have an off-leash reliable recall. And if you've never e-collar conditioned a dog before, let me just say, don't do that on your own. Hire a professional. It's so easy to do appropriately and correctly the first time. And it's just as easy to mess up and really do some damage, to scare your dog, to not have your dog respond appropriately, or to have to spend a lot of time counter conditioning what you messed up. So spend the money. If you're going to buy a short hair, be prepared to invest in a trainer for e-collar conditioning at least. They also will need significant training to walk well on a leash. This might be my biggest complaint that I hear from owners and from clients, is that they are just terrible to walk on a leash. And believe me, I understand. I can totally relate and empathize with these people. And again, like I mentioned, I really don't enjoy taking Blitz anywhere on a leash, because it's not a fun experience for either of us. If she can't run around, she's not happy. And that's hard for me to choose to manage that when I could take a dog like Ember, who couldn't be happier to be right beside me on a leash. So again, relative experience. But I do have plenty of short hairs that are very enjoyable to walk on a leash. I actually just sent one home that was, the past few short hairs I've had in for obedience training have been really great and easy to walk on a leash. So that's not saying they're all terrible, but both of those owners really complained about them walking on a leash prior to training. So, you know, everything I talk about here, I would say, isn't super applicable to my clients so much, because I feel like the majority of people I have investing in training with me are clients who've really researched the breed and are prepared to manage them. And they're obviously doing their due diligence by investing in training to set themselves and their dog up to have the best life together. So I can't commend them enough for investing in something like training, because it really will make life so much better with your short hair, to be able to have them off leash safely, to be able to get them back as soon as you call them, and to be able to walk them on a leash alone is going to significantly improve your quality of life and their quality of life. But moral of the story is, you've got to manage them, meaning you've got to put in some work to maintain that too. So you don't just get your dog home from training and they heal perfectly for the rest of their life. You don't just put them on cruise control like that and expect them to maintain that nice ear at your pant seam position forever. You've got to put some work in, and you've got to spend time training them. So they are a very high maintenance dog in that regard. You know, I could take my pit bull, who's very lazy, on a walk once a year, and it's always going to look the same regardless of how often I walk her. She's going to dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee right alongside beside me. She is reactive though, so I got to keep that in mind. But you know, if I'm just walking her up and down my road, that heel's not going to change regardless of if I put zero effort or 100% effort into it, because that's where she chooses to walk beside me. Short hairs are not generally, I would say 99% of them are not going to choose to walk beside you. A lot of them will, but you have to teach them and convince them and have consequences for them if they don't. So be prepared to manage them on walks. And know that if that's not going to be something that's enjoyable for you, so if you are pushing a stroller and listening to music and talking with friends and don't want to constantly be reminding your dog to stay in heel position, maybe the short hair is not the right fit for you. But if you want a running buddy who you're perfectly capable of keeping in heel position or even going to do cane and cross with, that could be a really great option. Another quick note in regards to training is that short hairs in general are very smart. They're very quick to learn things, sometimes to our detriment. But just because they are very smart does not mean they listen well. So it feels like a lot of people go, well, my dog's super smart. Why aren't they easier to train? And it's funny because a lot of them are smart and have high food drive, but they can be challenging to train because of their independence and their interest level in what you're doing. So just smart is not directly correlated to ease of training. And a lot of times their smartness and independence can make them particularly challenging to train, especially when it comes to things like walking on a leash. If they want to be out running around, you can struggle with that. And keep in mind, again, perspective. Ember is very easy to train because she wants to make me happy. She is all about what can I do for you. That is her whole personality. She would do anything if she thought it would make me happy. And Blitz, you know, loves me, but it's a very different personality. Blitz is very selfish, and it's her needs above everything else, which I think is overall a typical dog quality. And I don't hold that against her one bit, but I do keep that in mind when we're training, that she really needs to know, well, what's in it for me? And so when you have short hairs, a lot of times that's food. They're food motivated. Whereas Ember would, Ember, you could train with just smiles alone. She'd be like, oh my God, you smiled at me. This is the best day ever. I will do whatever you want. Blitz is like, unless you are giving me the highest value treat, I want nothing to do with you. So just because they know what you want to do, you want them to do, and just because they're capable of doing it, doesn't mean they're going to do it. I have a lot of clients who complain prior to bringing their dog to training that they have very selective hearing. And I think that's to be expected because short hairs are very involved in using their nose. And when they're using their nose, a lot of times they're not using their ears. So when they're out in the woods smelling something and we call and call and call for them, yes, they know you're talking to them. Yes, they know how to respond appropriately, meaning they know what recall means. But no, they're not going to do it unless you give them a very convincing reason why. So being smart does not mean they will listen well, and a lot of times that independence means they are definitely not going to listen well. So be prepared for that. So we've discussed that they're bred to be independent, and they're bred to be at a far distance from their handler, but they're also bred for seriously good endurance, more so than a lot of the other bird dogs in my experience. These dogs can go all day, every day. And I mentioned in my last podcast on mental emotional health that I don't even like to call them high energy because I feel like that term is slightly deceiving when we classify them with other dogs that might be high energy. They aren't just high energy. They are more like, you can maybe call it high maintenance, but it's something beyond high energy, in my opinion, because there's this mental component to it. There's this endurance aspect to it. It's not just the fact that they have a lot of energy. They need purpose. They need mental stimulation and so on. You really cannot wear them out. And again, there's as much variation within breeds as between them. So I'm sure someone out there is going to go, why have a short hair that can easily be worn out? That's not the case for the majority of them. They're not easy to wear out, and they build endurance exceptionally well. So if you walk 5 miles one day and it's worn out, it doesn't take very many days of 5 miles for them to suddenly need 7 miles to be worn out, and then 10 miles and so on and so on. And you will forever chase that curve, which I really recommend my clients not do. Oh, but they absolutely need physical exercise, but they also need proper mental and proper physical exercise. So it's important that they have an outlet for their energy, but in my opinion, the fenced-in backyard and left to their own device, or playing fetch for 10 minutes after work, is not proper physical and mental stimulation, in my opinion. That's not going to really cut it. So in my previous episode of my podcast, I mentioned how inappropriate those things are to rely on completely for short hairs, meaning, yeah, for sure, a short hair will enjoy a fenced-in backyard and they will enjoy playing fetch. But I don't think that that is enough for you to be like, I am set up to have a short hair in my life because I have a fenced-in yard and I plan on playing fetch with it. They need, in my opinion, deserve more than that. They need some kind of like productive work, meaning they need something to focus on. They need a job. And again, I'm not a huge fan of saying that, but they need really a purpose. And whether that's hunting or scent work or obedience or agility or some kind of other job, or, you know, their farm dog, something like that, they really need a purpose. If you don't give them purpose and you just leave them to their own devices without proper work, they're going to be naughty. I mean, there's really no getting around that. There's going to be naughty. And if you aren't familiar, there's a Facebook group called GSP Assholes, where the assholes refer to the dogs for doing shitty things like, you know, chewing up the couch or I think one of the last posts I saw in that group was a short hair literally tore all the siding off of the house. And that group is frustrating for me, and I had to leave it because the short hairs, in my opinion, are not the assholes. Yeah, they're doing shitty things, but they're doing shitty things because they have owners that aren't giving them rules, boundaries, and structure and outlets for their needs. They're not providing them what the short hair needs to not do those naughty things. So in my opinion, the owners are the assholes for getting these dogs and then just leaving them alone in their backyard without providing for them. Of course they chewed the siding off your house. They're so bored. They need something productive to do. So these dogs are displacing energy into a naughty behavior because they don't have other productive ways to use that energy. And they likely don't have appropriate rules, boundaries, and structure. So I don't think that's the dog's fault in that case. I think that's the owner's. And honestly, I don't think it's cute or funny to really post those things anyways. And then, you know, everyone's like, oh, what a terrible dog. But honestly, that dog is just doing what it can to alleviate some of that tension that's caused from not having an outlet. And I see this show up in a lot of ways. And again, I give all the credit in the world to my clients for investing and training with me, because that shows me that you're doing your homework and setting your dog and yourself up for success in order to provide them with the rules, boundaries, and structure and things they outlets for their energy. But prior to coming to training with me, a lot of this built up, pent up energy displaces in a bunch of different ways. A lot of times you'll see it in frustration. So we can have dogs that are reactive out of frustration, or I talked about in my one podcast, the leash biting. There was a dog that clearly just needed a better outlet that her owners weren't able to provide because she couldn't safely be off leash and wasn't walking well on a leash. She was turning around and grabbing the leash and chewing it up. It's just frustration from saying, I want to be out doing more, and here I am being held back on this leash. So we can provide them with proper mental and physical exercise and rules and boundaries and structure, and give them plenty of productive things to do so that they don't do those things. And something I think about a lot in regards to short hairs, if you can't make good decisions on your own, I'm going to make good decisions for you. So that means if I can't be there to watch you. I'm not going to leave you alone in my backyard and give you the ability to chew the siding off my house. I am going to crate you while I'm gone. So that's something you really need to be aware of. I really don't think that any dog should be left alone, especially on an electric fence. That gives me more anxiety than most things in life. But if that's your idea of giving that dog some sort of outlet, be prepared for your siding to be chewed or your pillows on your outdoor furniture. I get that a lot. I left my dog outside, chewed up all of the cushions on my outdoor furniture. They dug holes. They dug their way out and escaped. Those are all things I hear. And these dogs just are bored and they don't have anything else to do. So they're coming up with their own things to do. And it's just not things we want them to be doing. So we need to manage that by not leaving them outside alone and giving them other more productive things to do. Moving on, GSPs are naturally very restless. So you'll notice they're constantly on the go. They're tippy-tapping around, they're checking this out, they're checking that out. And some have a more natural off switch than others, but a lot of the short hairs I see do not know how to settle on their own. They don't have a good way of regulating themselves, and they will go and go and go and go until someone goes, all right, time to be crated. And then they finally go, oh my God, thank God, I'm exhausted. Self-regulation is not something that they're very good at. But what that means is, for one, they are hard to wear out. So again, you can get caught in this vicious circle of activity of using 5 miles to wear them out, and then suddenly you need 7 and then 10 and so on. So they adjust to the level of activity, and their threshold for activity will constantly increase, and they will need more and more and more. So it's, while I think it's good to exercise them and they need that and they deserve that, if you constantly exercise them and entertain them, they will have no concept of how to turn off on their own. And this is something I can talk about with a lot of experience, because this is something I did with Blitz, and it was one of maybe the biggest life lessons in dog ownership I've ever learned. Because even at 7 years old, Blitz is terrible at being bored. She's terrible at days off. She's terrible at, you know, rainy days and so on. And she's getting better. I mean, she's certainly a heck of a lot better now at 7 than she was when she was 1, 2, 3. But even now, it's very, very hard for her to have like 2 days off in a row. She's annoying. She's whiny. She's restless. She's in and out. She's tippy-tapping around. Very not enjoyable for me to live with if she's not having plenty of things to do. So, you know, when I'm somewhere and I can just kick her out outside and she can go explore and do things, that's when I like Blitz the most. But especially when we're home and it's raining or I'm not feeling well and I need her to just hang out, she's absolutely terrible about it. And that's a little bit of, you know, being a short hair, but that's also a little bit of how I raised her to not have the ability to just be bored for durations. So teaching them that skill is important while they're young, and that's something I would be happy to help clients with. That is a big part of the program. But my point here is they need a balance of mental and physical activity. They need help managing themselves. They need to be entertained sometimes, but there also has to be a balance of times where they're not entertained. So you need both. Again, I don't think it's appropriate to think that you're just going to have a fenced-in yard and put your dog out there and they're going to be happy and not get into any trouble if that's their only outlet for mental and physical activity. Also, in regards to them being restless, really keep that in mind and be realistic and honest with yourself if that's a quality that interests you. Because when people come to me and they say, I want a dog that's going to hang out at the coffee shop or be my shotgun rider, or, you know, I work from home, I want them to sit by my side all day, or I have a boat and I want them to hang out in the boat all day with me while I'm fishing. None of those things are going to be what a short hair enjoys. A short hair naturally wants to be on the go, exploring, running around. And so anytime we take that away from them, we're going to be building up a little bit of frustration. And that doesn't mean we can't do it. I see plenty of dogs that do it and owners that do it well. But keep in mind that's not going to be their preference, and you're going to have to put in a lot more work in order to get that. So Ember, I can put in a boat or in a sit somewhere for hours, and she'll never once complain. She's not going to move out of that sit. She's not going to get up. She might not even adjust. She's going to chill and be there until I tell her to do something differently, and she's going to be the happiest dog in the world doing it. A short ear is going to need to be managed in those instances, meaning you're going to have to keep them in a command. When they pop up out of that down, you're going to have to put them back in a down, and it's something that you're going to have to build up over time because they are restless. And that is an advantage for a hunting dog, so they're going to be harder to tire out. These are all of their qualities that make them hard companions make them very good hunting dogs, which is what they should be. So they're going to be harder to manage in those instances, but that doesn't mean you can't, but it's something to keep in mind that if your primary goal is to have a dog that's very chill and sitting with you constantly and very stable, very happy to just hang out, short hairs are not going to be the best fit for you. So they are hunting dogs, and regardless if you hunt them or not, they will likely, or they at least should, in my opinion, have decent prey drive. Meaning every squirrel, every bird, every rabbit, lizard, bug, and so on will never go unnoticed. And depending on their level of prey drive, like Blitz in particular, that also might include moles and mice and groundhogs and skunks and cats and all those things being on the menu too. That's not all short hairs, but that is some of them and something that you need to keep in mind. It will vary from dog to dog, but all of them will have some basic level of prey drive. Again, another reason why I don't take Blitz to coffee shops and restaurants, because those city critters, as I call them, meaning the birds and squirrels that are brave and used to people and are desperate to get a snack, become very close to becoming a snack. And it's not a fun experience for me, and it's, I would wager, somewhat stressful for Blitz, because the whole time we're sitting outside having coffee and there's all these little Tweety birds hopping around within a couple feet, she's on high alert and is shaking and is frustrated because she can't get to them and can't just hang out and relax because she's in hunting mode. And not all dogs are like that. Ember has good prey drive and is a hunting dog, but she's very contextual about it. So, of course, she's like interested in squirrels and birds, like a lot of dogs are, but she's not at the level of, oh my God, I've got to get to that, like Blitz is. And that doesn't go for all hunting dogs, but I will say, or all short hairs, but I will say, I do know a difference in dogs that we teach to hunt birds and their desire to engage with prey. So, you know, you might have a dog come in for training and they see a Tweety bird and they're like, oh, that's cool. And then after, you know, teaching them about birds and teaching them to chase birds and capture birds and carry around birds, they suddenly become, oh my God, there's a bird. So just be prepared for that. There are very different levels of how much a dog will engage in prey like that. But if you're living in a neighborhood where there's a bunch of rabbits, it could be a potentially very painful experience to go on walks. I remember specifically, I stayed with a friend in Colorado, and the neighborhood was just full of these like super docile rabbits, and it was an absolutely miserable experience to take Blitz out and try to get her to go potty. She just could not think straight because there were so many bunnies running around. And I will never forget that, because that was that moment in my life where I was like, I cannot live in a suburban neighborhood with this dog ever. She would be miserable. I would be miserable. That life cannot be for us. So be prepared to manage them around critters and know that that's something that can be managed, but something that's likely to show up. And depending on what your situation is or what you plan to do with them, that might be something more notable than others. I can't talk about realistic expectations of owning a short hair without talking about the whining. This is definitely my biggest issue with a breed. Not just whining, you know, there are a variety of dogs that whine, but the incessant whining that short hairs do is on another level. Like a legitimate issue. I think a lot of dogs whine to go outside or whine at dinner time and so on, but the whining, the incessant whining that short hairs have is definitely maybe on another planet than the majority of other breeds. And I've worked with a whole bunch of short hairs. I've lived with hundreds of short hairs. I feel pretty confident in saying the majority of them whine to a significant extent. And again, some more than others, I've had a handful out of those hundreds that I could probably name off because they made such an impact on me that didn't whine. So I can name off the few that didn't whine. Every time I have a short hair in, I think, well, maybe this one is the, you know, one of the top three dogs that whine, but I think that for the majority of them. So many of them whine way, way more than so many of them that don't. So it's not just when they need something. It's like a constant state of arousal, meaning they can't settle, they can't relax. I talk about this in my previous podcasts on mental and emotional wellness. It's this constant state of being unsatisfied. I call it breathe whining because it's almost impossible to differentiate the breathing from the whining because they go hand in hand. That's how incessant it is. So it's definitely a red flag for like some mental instability, but in my opinion, it's not really, it's rarely relating to needs being met. And so I discussed in that episode how I feel like it's relating to genetics and seeking systems and hunting and those kinds of things. And I'm not going to get back into that, but let me just say that if whining bothers you to any extent, you should consider a different breed because it is a lot. And you know, maybe it's not so bothersome for people who have one short hair. I don't think I really started to notice it until it became a lot of short hairs over a long duration of time. And so, you know, when you have two or three or four short hairs all whining incessantly and you've got this little choir going on in your house, you for sure notice it. So maybe it's not so bothersome for people who only have one. But what I will tell you is that they all whine. So if you have any issues with whining, period, consider a different breed. Along with that, short hairs tend to be pretty emotional, which again, I talk about that in my recent podcast. But what that means is that the highs are high and the lows are low. So they can be extremely happy and exuberant and bouncing off the walls, but they can also be really dramatic and pouty and nervous and anxious and so on. They can be very extreme in all of their emotions. Because of that, I feel like short hairs do best with people who aren't very emotional and who aren't going to add to that emotion. Because anytime we pour into that emotion, we're going to exaggerate it. So if we baby them or try to treat them like humans, you're going to increase that emotional state versus tapering it down. And again, I cover a lot of this in my last podcast, but what that might look like is, between genetics and coddling them, we can make them even more whiny. We can make them even more unsettled, more dramatic. A lot of these dogs that are struggling with their emotions will also struggle with resilience, meaning they take a long time to recover from things. What that can look like is they get really weird and like Blitz gets really nervous really fast about silly stuff, but has a lot of resilience when she's hunting, but outside of hunting can be really weird, like has severe anxiety at the vet and all this stuff that you wouldn't expect. But she's certainly an emotional dog, and anytime I add to that emotion, oh no, are you okay? It exacerbates it for sure. A lot of them shake constantly, which I think is due to a little bit of anxiety, maybe due to a little bit of stress, a little bit of lack of their ability to manage their emotions. And I think some of that shaking, which to me is more like vibrating because it's not like shaking because they're cold. It's just like they live in this constant state of trembling. A lot of that shaking, I think, is displacement from being frustrated with their physical and mental situation, meaning if they want to be up running around and we put them in a down, a lot of them will shake out of, I think, frustration or a little bit of maybe even anxiousness about not being able to control the situation. We get a lot of things that pop up when we have very emotional dogs versus, you know, a less emotional dog. Again, I'm going to use labs as an example, or like more of the mind frame of, oh, I'm not running around anymore, I'm a down. Cool. Oh, we're at the vet, they've got treats. Cool. Oh, we're doing this now. Cool. Whereas a short hair might be like, ah, I need to be doing this, I need to be doing that, I can't do this, I can't do that, I'm frustrated, I'm bored, I want to go, I'm blah, blah. And that's just a lot of times their whole mindset is just like spinning versus just, all right, that's what it is. So if anything, short hairs make excellent hunting dogs. So if you're really looking for an upland dog, I think you'd be hard pressed to find one that you can't make work. A lot of them are very natural bird dogs, and a lot of them are very very fun to train for bird dog stuff because they are so natural at it. But if I was doing something like only waterfowl hunting, I would get a lab. And I know a lot of people are going to argue with me with that, which I think is funny, and I will not engage that conversation because if you want a short hair just for waterfowl, you go get you that short hair for waterfowl. I'm not going to argue with you. But I don't understand it. I don't understand why it's so offensive for short hair people in general and in regards to labs. Short hair, if you don't know, a lot of short hair people hate labs, and so I know I'm going to be ruffling some feathers by comparing them to labs so much in this podcast, and I really don't mean to be offensive. That's certainly not my intention. I have a short hair and a lab that I love dearly, but I will say, so I'll just say that, you know, if you want a strictly waterfowl dog, that's all you're looking for, a short hair isn't even going to be in my top five, maybe not even in my top 10 recommendations. There are so many other dogs that I think are more suited for that. For one, because of the cold, you can definitely get into dangerous situations very quickly with a short hair in cold water. You can get into dangerous situations with labs in cold water, let alone short hairs. But for two, they aren't always the most excited about swimming. There are some out there that are heathens for water, but I would say the majority of them like water. They don't love water. And then you have, I already know someone's going to fight me on that, but just know that when we compare short hairs to labs, the labs in general will love water more. That's all I'm going to say about it. No need to argue with me about short hairs and water, but also, the keeping them calm and quiet for long durations, again, there are so many dogs that are going to excel in that before a short hair will. Requiring a short hair to sit still and be quiet takes work. Again, just like I talked about at the coffee shop and those kinds of things, you can certainly do it. I'm not telling you you can't. Plenty of people do, and they make it work, and they have fun, and they all enjoy it. But depending on how much work you want to put in, and depending on the dog you buy and where you're hunting, all those things, I would encourage you to look into alternatives if you're just a waterfowl hunter. But if you want to do a little bit of everything, sure, short hair works. But again, not my preference for waterfowl. And here's how I think about it. If you have a family and you're looking for a car, are you going to get a fancy two-seater or are you going to buy a sedan? So the short hair might look cooler. It might be, you know, more novel and fun to have in photos of your short hair duck hunting and yada yada, but it's not the practical option for strictly waterfowl hunting. I also see a lot of people get them for strictly dove hunting, and I will say that they aren't my top pick for that either, for the same reasons. Sit still, be quiet is not their favorite thing to do, and while we can teach them to do that, they take a lot of management. So when we have the ability to choose another dog that's easier for them, I would encourage you to look into those alternatives. But again, if you're dead set on having a short hair be your waterfowl or dove dog, by all means, go for it. Just know it might take you a little bit longer than your buddy who's got the lab, and that's just naturally going to sit there and be quiet. And that doesn't mean that all labs are going to sit there and be quiet. I know that. Yes, I know everyone has a buddy with a lab that's vocal, or everyone, yada, yada, yada. I'm generalizing here. I'm just trying to make everyone's life easy. By all means, do whatever you want to do when it comes to buying dogs. I'm not going to stop you. I'm just trying to make sure everyone is aware of what they're signing up for. If you want a dove dog, you should look into a Boykin. That would be what I would get if we're talking about dove dogs. But anyways, to wrap up, I think that short hairs have a lot of great qualities. They are funny dogs. They've got great personalities. They are characters. They are very entertaining to be around. And in general, when they're not whining, I really enjoy their company. They tend to be very friendly, but that doesn't mean I don't have a bite history with a couple. I've certainly gotten tagged by more short hairs than any other breed, but that's because I mostly work with short hairs. They're generally very smart and love to work and are food motivated and are toy motivated. So, you know, if you have something you want to do with a dog, like a specific sport or whatever, and you think a short hair is going to do it, a lot of times they really enjoy working and having purpose. So they are great options for people that really want kind of a sporty, athletic dog. I think that they can be extremely beautiful dogs, and I think that can be to a detriment to them in some ways, because buying a dog alone based on their looks is a terrible idea, but especially when it comes to a dog like this that really requires so much, that if you think that I'm just going to buy a short hair as a family pet because I love their look, you are really not setting yourself or that dog up for success. You have to really give them something to do in a way that's going to be fulfilling. And if you have a purpose for them, I think you will be golden. But if you don't, and you are dead set on getting a short hair, I think you should definitely consider what that purpose might be and what that might look like. I know that this is going to be a strong opinion, and I understand that a lot of people are going to disagree with that. But it's an opinion, and I'm entitled to have my opinions, therefore I'm not going to argue about it. But personally, I would not get another short hair unless I was doing some serious upland hunting in the Midwest or even further west. And I really don't have any intentions of living that lifestyle, so I can fairly confidently say that Blitz will probably be my last short hair. And maybe I don't feel weird about that or sentimental about that. I'm not a super sentimental person to begin with, but I don't feel weird about that because I have so many short hairs in for training. I get plenty of short hair time, but, I love them and I adore them, but I will be honest here and say they are not suited for my lifestyle. I like a dog with a great off switch. I like a dog that is medium to low maintenance. I like a dog that can hang out and do nothing for long durations of time. And more importantly to me than anything, is I like a dog that's unnoticeable. And I get that that is my lifestyle. I like a dog that's unnoticeable because there are so many dogs in my life. If every dog I had was like Blitz, I would go insane. I could not keep up with that. So I love that Ember is so unobtrusive in my life because that helps me manage the Blitz in my life. So if you have one dog, obviously the majority of people probably don't want them to be unnoticeable. They like that they're constantly seeking attention and being entertaining and those kinds of things. So I'm just saying, for me personally, that's not conducive to my lifestyle. You know, short hairs can, and that can has asterisks around it, do all the things I want my lab to do, but they aren't going to be as happy doing them, and it's going to take a lot more work. Again, just like the going to restaurants and coffee shops and so on, sometimes I feel like that Blitz kind of perceives that as punishment to make her sit still and be quiet. She gets bored so easily, and she doesn't like to lay on concrete. You know, she's dramatic for sure. So she really hates it. And I feel like she would much rather be at home in her cozy cave or something like that than being forced to lay on concrete at a restaurant for an hour. That is literal punishment for her. And I hate that when I take Ember to do those things that I know Blitz is not going to enjoy, that I still feel guilty leaving her at home. And that guilt is a big deal for me. So that's another reason why I likely will never have another short hair, is because I want to have a dog that can do all those things with me. And because I know Blitz won't enjoy that, I still feel guilty over not doing those, not allowing her to participate in those things. That creates a lot of conflict and a lot of guilt in my life that I don't want or need to have any more of. So, you know, I love Blitz more than anything in this world. And as much as I think Ember is my perfect dog, I undoubtedly love Blitz more. There's no question about that. So even with that, knowing how much I love Blitz, I'm honest in my expectations and I'm honest about my lifestyle. And I know that short hairs are not the practical breed for me. So keep in mind that not everyone is going to agree with everything I've said here. I've tried to make that clear. There's going to be a variety of reasons. So look at the lifestyle of people who have differing opinions on these dogs. So, you know, people who have a short hair that's kenneled all day, like outside in a kennel, and then they just let it out for a few minutes at night to play around and whatever else, and then they put them back in the kennel, their experience with a short hair is going to be very different than mine. For better or for worse, I don't know. But it's going to be very different from my experience of living with a bunch of short hairs inside my house. On the other end of the spectrum, you might have an owner that is not, not very in tune with their dog or not very much a dog person. And they could have a very different experience from me as well. For instance, someone might say that their dog doesn't need very much exercise, but also in the very next sentence talk about in this past week, their short hairs chewed up the TV remote, it dug a hole in the backyard, it escaped and ran around for a couple hours, and it never quits whining. So for me, those things are red flags that my dog isn't getting enough physical and mental exercise, or it's not being managed well, or it needs more rules, boundaries, and structure, and so on. But some people might look at that and just classify their dog as naughty. So no, my short hair doesn't need a bunch of activity, but it is very naughty. So again, that's their interpretation of owning a short hair might be very different than mine, because we have different ways of classifying behaviors. So if you're listening to someone talk about their experience with a short hair, keep those things in mind. Like, keep in mind what they do with their dog, what their lifestyle is. Keep in mind how you perceive the dog to behave. Again, because everything is relative. What they think might be a good or bad dog might not necessarily be what you feel like is a good or bad dog. And, you know, just keep in mind their experience. So when you're looking at getting someone's opinion on a breed, it's more so than just saying, yeah, I have this breed and I love it. I'll tell you this right now. The majority of people, like almost everyone, loves their dog. I've rarely asked someone about their dog and they're like, well, let me tell you about what a terrible dog it is. No, that's why if you sign up for training with me, I ask for 3 good things that you like about your dog and 3 bad things, because I know it's so much easier to talk about the good things first before talking about the bad things, and everyone wants to talk about those good things. So if you meet a stranger on a street with a short hair, they're not going to go, well, let me tell you about what a pain in the ass this dog is. I've never encountered that, but yet when I ask about those 3 things, I usually get some 3 meaty things that need to be changed, not just little, well, you know, he occasionally jumps on people. No, it's usually 3 big things that need to be changed. So keep that in mind, that everyone loves to talk about the good things about their dog, me included. So that's why, again, that's why I'm doing this whole episode, is to talk about the things that no one wants to talk about, which is the reality of the daily struggles of having a high energy hunting dog. To wrap this all up, I don't think there's any better way of summing it up than saying that short hairs are a lifestyle. And you've got to be willing to accept that and sometimes change your lifestyle in order to be the owner your dog needs you to be if you want to be a good short hair owner. So like back when I had a ton of flexibility in my schedule and Blitz was really my only dog other than Pinky, who doesn't really count, I enjoyed her so much. I'm not saying I still don't, but like I was such a short hair person back in those days. I had all the GSP shirts and hats and decals, and I, you know, worked with the GSP rescue, and at one point I owned 4 or 5 GSPs at one time. It was essentially my whole personality. But over time I realized that it is a very exhausting personality and lifestyle, meaning if you have one and that's everything you're doing, you will love a short hair. I mean, you will love it. And I think that's what's so deceiving, is you see these people on social media where they have 1 or 2 short hairs and it's their whole life, their entire life, and you go, wow, that looks so cool. What a cool dog, what a cool person. I want to be like them. But unless you're willing to have that same lifestyle, you could have a very different experience. You know, everything I did in those days revolved around Blitz, and it still does to a certain extent. You know, every day I wake up and I think, well, what am I going to do with Blitz today? Because she's certainly not going to have a couple days off in a row. So I'm constantly thinking about what I can do with her. I can't go on vacation without seriously thinking about Blitz, because if I leave her, I've got to leave her with someone who is equipped to deal with her, meaning, you know, they're either going, she hates walking, so I don't want to leave her with someone who's only going to take her for leash walks. If she's off leash, I have to leave her with someone who can be confident and trusting with her being safely off leash, or who is, you know, prepared to handle her being off leash. If I take her with me on that vacation, I have to manage my whole vacation around her, because she can't just hang out in a cabin in the woods. You know, she's got to be out running around or doing things, or she's going to drive me crazy and ruin my whole relaxing vacation. So a lot of being a short hair owner, it can be making it your lifestyle. And I feel like the people that do make their short hair their lifestyle are the most successful short hair owners. And that's not to say that that's the only way to have a short hair. Obviously, that's not true. But when I think that people see these dogs and they go, I just want one as a pet and this pet will adjust to my lifestyle, and their lifestyle doesn't allow a significant amount of time for that dog, I think that's when people struggle. And I think that's, you know, going back to the beginning of this episode, I think that's when we see a lot of people go, this is a great dog, but it's not for me. And that's because they don't have the ability, because of work or because of kids or whatever else, to have their lifestyle change to meet the dog, versus thinking the dog's lifestyle is going to change to meet their lifestyle. You know, I think you really have to be a dedicated and a devoted dog owner to truly thrive with a GSP, and for a GSP to truly thrive with you. They're not a breed to be taken lightly. I love these dogs, and I want to see the very best for them. And the very best for them is going to be an owner that's knowledgeable and is understanding of what they're signing up for, and most of all is committed to providing that. That's the key here. Short hairs require a huge commitment in a variety of ways. They are high maintenance dog, and that commitment cannot be wavering. They need and deserve more than just the basics of food, water, shelter, and, you know, a pet life. They need much more than that. So if you're still interested in getting a short hair after this, please, please find a good breeder. There are plenty of breeders out there that claim to be good breeders and are not. And, you know, just like I've talked about in previous episodes, it all starts with genetics, and getting the right genetics can make a world of difference with short hairs, especially when we're talking about behavioral issues and whining and anxiety and hunting ability. All of these things start with good genetics. So please, 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 please reach out if you need help finding a good breeder. Or even if you want to send me a breeder and go, hey, what are your honest opinions of this? I would love to share my honest opinions on a breeder. There are so many people out there knowing that they can make a few dollars off of breeding short hairs that are not worthy of being bred and that aren't setting people up for success to really get the most out of and enjoy their dog. So regardless of if that's genetic issues or health issues or whatever else, I have an episode on my podcast about choosing a breeder, but again, you're never going to bother me if you reach out asking for opinions on a specific breeder, because I want to see people thrive with their dogs. If anyone is considering a different breed after this podcast, I commend you for being honest with yourself, and I appreciate that, and your future dog appreciates that. I would be happy to discuss alternative breeds, or if there's a breed in particular that you're interested in, I would be happy to point you in the direction of someone who's very knowledgeable about that and can go over that breed with you. And again, if you're still in it for the short hair puppy, reach out. Sign up for training, whether it's with me or someone else. Be prepared in that regard. That is one of the best investments you can make. Again, I commend my clients so much for investing in training with their short hairs, because that is, in my opinion, one of the best things you can do for your mental health, for their mental health, in order to provide them the best fulfilled life. So if you've got a short hair puppy, reach out sooner rather than later. The majority of trainer schedules fill up quickly, and that's not something you want to wait and see. Please don't wait and see if you need help. Set yourself up for success, and when that dog is ready to be e-collar conditioned, get an e-collar conditioned so you can have it off leash, if anything, for safety reasons. So if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out. I'm going to include some links to the podcast that I've referred to in this episode with Hunting Dog Confidential in the description. But I hope everyone enjoyed that, and I hope no one's too upset about how much I like labs.